Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The second round of talks in Istanbul have come and gone. By all accounts, nothing much was agreed to. The conflict in Ukraine will grind on. Unable to achieve success on the battlefield, Kyiv instead focuses on spectacle and narrative manipulation, all of which is at the expense of diplomacy. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guests. In Naples, we have Brandon Wyhert. He is a former congressional staffer, senior editor at the National Interest, and author of A Disaster of Our Making, How the West Lost Ukraine. And in Athens, we cross to Dmitry Laskaris. He is a lawyer and freelance journalist. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Brandon, let me go to you first here. Originally, I had planned that we would talk about the outcome of the talks in Istanbul. I guess we could just wrap this up real quickly. Not very much. Okay. Now let's go to the real news. The massive and very sophisticated drone attack on Russia just prior to the talks in Istanbul. I really strongly feel that this is not getting enough attention in the West, because maybe you'll get my drift when I tell you I've titled this program Dr. Strangelove 2025. What are your thoughts?
No, it's not getting much coverage at all. It's being significantly downplayed. I think there are some people, like my colleague Steve Bannon on his very popular podcast. He's the one talking a lot about this. I've been talking about it. But in terms of mainstream, quote unquote, media sources, they're not covering it the way they should. This is a significant escalation from Ukraine. And I would just like to add here that I have it on very good authority that President Trump was not briefed about any of this, which is very scary when you consider the kind of power the United States has militarily, and his intelligence services are just doing their own thing. And then I would also add that basically the intelligence services, NATO and Ukraine, have decided to defy the United States' desire to have peace and peace talks. That's all this attack was. The rumored attack on Putin 2 weeks ago was another attempt by the Ukrainians to undermine President Trump's ability to negotiate. And as you note, Peter, Istanbul is now dead, and NATO has what it wants. It has no off-ramp right now to peace.
Well, Dmitry, the plausible deniability, this is what Brandon was getting at. And I get that, okay? And that is for the internal purposes of American politics. We can go back to Iran-Contra. Did Reagan know he didn't? If he didn't know, he was an idiot. If he did know, he was an idiot, okay? That's the kind of circular argument that you get. But plausible deniability doesn't work from when you're looking at the other side. I mean, how should the Russians look at this? Trump didn't know? He did know? What does it mean? What is it supposed to mean to them, the other side, Dmitry?
With all due respect to our colleague, I find it completely and utterly implausible that Trump didn't know. I'm not in a position to, you know, assess the credibility of Brandon's, you know, sources. So I just have to go on the basis of objectively available evidence. Trump, a few days before, 4 days before this incredible escalation, said that Russia's playing with fire. This had ominous similarity to Joe Biden saying that we're going to end Nord Stream. And then a few months later, lo and behold, Nord Stream was blown up. He had a call with Lavrov, Marco Rubio,
right
after the attack. And if you look at Lavrov's statement, he's very clear. This is a consummate supreme diplomat. And he says, Rubio gave us condolences over the death of the passengers in the rail incident. But he didn't say anything, Rubio, according to Lavrov's readout of the attack on Russian nuclear bases, which is a much more serious escalation.
Well, I mean, Dmitry, do you believe...
Why have they condemned it, Peter?
Go ahead, Brandon. Go ahead.
Well, I would just like to say, my sources, I have very close sources to what's going on, particularly at Langley. They've basically hermetically sealed the John Ratcliffe, head of CIA. They're not briefing him the way they should. He's not intellectually curious enough to get down to the mid-level and find out what's going on. Tulsi Gabbard has been hermetically sealed again in the DNI ever since she started releasing information about January 6th being a possible inside job. Ever since she changed a few weeks ago the daily briefing for the president. That's when all this started. I am really quite convinced, and this doesn't excuse it. I'm not, you know, this is a despicable act, and I'll say that on the record. But I'm telling you, the real crisis here is the constitutional crisis for us, because the president is not being briefed. They are not telling him. And the real problem is that Trump is not asserting authority. He's not putting people in place. There are many personnel spots still left open, which means when the cat's away, the mice will play. The danger here is the deep state of the United States, which I know the Russians know is very real. And Trump has been a continual target and victim of this group. And he's not, and I don't understand why. He seems very reticent. Perhaps he doesn't want to get shot. He seems very reticent to actually kind of tamp down on this group. And I think now you're seeing what happens when there's no presidential power exercise.
We have to be clear. And it's, I'm going to go back to Dimitri here. It is claimed. We have to question everything. Sure. Okay. But Dimitri, it's claimed this operation took a year and a half. So this is still a Biden policy here. Now, Dimitri, if Trump did know, then what is he thinking about repairing U.S.-Russia relations if he did know that this type of attack was going to be backed by the United States and other NATO countries? Can they both be real at the same time, Dimitri?
No, he's effectively declared war on Russia.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you said it. I was waiting for that. Okay, good.
This is not new. Peter, in February, Pete Hegseth, the U.S. Defense Secretary, gave a speech to the Ukraine Contract Group. And what he said in his speech, you can read it on, you know, his website. He said, we are going to shift our resources. There has to be a division of labor. We are going to shift our resources to China, and you need to dramatically increase your military spending and arm Ukraine to the teeth. How is that a message of peace? I mean, come on, man. At what point are we going to stop giving Trump the benefit of the doubt? Trump was the first president to give lethal weaponry to Ukraine. Trump never got in the way of Ukraine's accession to NATO. He supported that. Trump did major dangerous military exercises with Ukraine's military during his first administration. He pulled the United States out of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, which was an extremely provocative step. The man's record stinks and reeks of warmongering. All he's doing is transferring the burden for keeping Ukraine going to the Europeans, but he doesn't want peace. Come on, let's get real here.
I disagree.
That's okay. I think he wants peace. He isn't willing to do the heavy lifting to do that, because Brandon, as things stand right now, and we all know the president likes to win, okay? But
which is why he would nuke his own peace.
Hang on. Okay, as things stand right now, I think all three of us agree the Istanbul process is just dead. Okay, maybe
it's
meet again for prisoner exchange. Okay, but you don't need to meet to do that. Okay, and also is a big L, a loss, is that repairing U.S.-Russia relations. That is very much in question. As we're speaking right now, gentlemen, Trump hasn't, at least I know, not I'm aware of, said anything about this, which is very odd. Go ahead, Brandon.
That should be the tell that I think he's realizing that he is not being given all the information. This is the crisis here. And the issue now, I mean, your guest is somewhat incorrect when he says that Trump supported the NATO accession of Ukraine. That's never been the case. I can tell you that with 100% certainty.
Did he offer the Russians a deal and say, I'm going to put in writing
Hold on. He was railroaded by his own intelligence agencies in the first term. 2018 Helsinki was his attempt to actually reset. I talk about this in my book. Helsinki was actually fairly successful considering what he was up against. He was trying to reset relations with Russia, truly, but his own intelligence services got him. There was a guy named Eric Ciramella at the NSC who was leaking communications to the press. I have to stress this. People outside of the United States, people who've never worked in D.C., do not understand how pervasive the rot within the intelligence agencies are. The intelligence agencies are very anti-Russia.
You don't have to convince me of that.
But my point is that Donald Trump is not well suited to understand that he took over. This is not a corporate buyout.
Yeah, but, is, but before I go to Dimitri, but Brandon, yeah. Let's all be fair here. Let's get real. He was president before. He should know how this thing works
by
now.
He was, and they railroaded him.
Okay,
he was.
Look, you've got Marco Rubio briefing him now? And he's Secretary of State also?
Exactly.
I mean, do you trust somebody like Marco Rubio? The guy's a snake in the grass.
Yeah, no, I certain issues I think he's okay on, but the issues like we're talking now, no. But again, this is Donald Trump not putting in the elbow grease to actually do what he said, which is to drain the swamp. This is the problem right now with Trump, is he's not following through on his bureaucratic reforms, because I don't think he fully understands what he's up against, and he certainly hasn't brought people in with him
who fully understand. And on top of it, Brandon, he's disappointing MAGA. MAGA wants this thing
hugely
done here.
On this.
Okay. All right, let's go back to Dimitri. Yeah. Go ahead, Dimitri. You guys are great talkers. Keep going.
He's continuing to arm Ukraine. Okay, he could have pulled the plug on that. He's continuing to send intelligence, to provide intelligence to Ukraine. He could have pulled the plug on that. He continues to have military and intelligence personnel in Ukraine. He could have pulled the plug on that. As somebody whose analysis I greatly admire, Douglas McGregor, has said, why hasn't Trump done any of those things? He could have brought this war to an end in a heartbeat if he was serious. He has done none of that. I don't judge people by their rhetoric, especially when they have a record of pathologically lying, as Biden did as well, by the way. All Western leaders are pathological liars. It's not just Trump. I look at their actions, and by any rational measure, the objective actions of Trump point to war. This man wants war. All he's doing is exactly what his Secretary of Defense said they were going to do. He wants to reallocate U.S. resources to China and West Asia to wage war there, while the Europeans take
down
the border.
Well, all right, Dimitri, I'll push back a little bit. I don't think he wants war. The problem is he isn't doing enough to stop it.
Let me rephrase.
What he wants is to perpetuate U.S. hegemony, okay?
Okay.
And he's willing to wage war.
Can I just add one other thing?
Go ahead, bro.
I don't agree that he wants to perpetuate U.S. hegemony in Europe. This is why he's talking about removing, letting the Europeans take the lead for their own defense. This is not what a hegemonic player would do. I think that Trump is very much understanding that we are at the very least in a tripolar system of the U.S., Russia, and China. But the problem is he's going about this sloppily, and that's because this is not his forte.
To go to a hard break, and we're going to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Brandon. So let's kind of, you know, game this out right now. Obviously, Ukraine was the surrogate here. We're told, again, we need to confirm it. This was planned for a year and a half. Okay, the damage has been done. Not nearly as much as the NPR and the CNNs and the BBCs. They're gloating about this.
Yes,
when we
disgusting.
Have a Dr. Strangelove moment, they're gloating. Yes. It's really quite amazing, okay?
But it's disgusting, actually.
So, obviously, they want to see Russia overreact, okay? And remember, everyone, this is right before the Istanbul talks, okay? So this is very well choreographed, okay? Now, they want an overreact. They're not going to get it, okay? Because if we look at the entire history of the special military operation, we have never seen evidence of that, and I don't think it's going to happen now. But obviously, what I think is in play right now, and I've, you know, any viewers of this program know that I always give hope a chance, okay? I always give hope a moment, okay? Well, that hope is basically disappeared for me right now. As I said in my introduction, Brent, this war is going to grind on, and the outcome will be met on the battlefield. Go ahead, Brandon.
I agree with you completely, and I've been saying for 2.5 years the outcome is already baked into the cake. Ukraine is over. Russia is won. And this really shouldn't even be an American concern. I personally don't care what happens to Ukraine. I think I speak for a majority of Americans. And so, and by the way, I do believe I speak also for Donald Trump on this one. And that's why I wrote 2 weeks ago in the American Conservative, in my initial article for them, I argued that whether it's purposeful or not, Trump is going to walk away from Ukraine and let the pieces fall as they may. I still believe Trump very much wants to do business with Vladimir Putin on a range of other issues. Whether or not that's possible now because of what has happened, again, he would not have scuttled his own peace talks. That doesn't make sense for him, but he's not exerting control, and I don't think he really understands what he's up against with his own intelligence services. I will just add as well, I've been doing a deep dive on the losses of Russia after these attacks. The Western media is again lying and exaggerating about what exactly the Russians lost. The Russian warfighting capability is marginally affected by this, the loss of some of these bombers. Long-range weapons can be deployed from sea-based platforms, land-based platforms. It's not just about bombers anymore. And frankly, the Russians have lots and lots and lots of bombers in storage. And given the way the defense industry is working in Russia at overtime, they can probably refurbish those bombers in 6 months to a year and recoup whatever losses they had. So this whole thing was a waste, but it was designed for one thing. And I think that the people in Russia need to understand, and this is why I don't believe Trump was part of this, that it was designed to do one thing, and that was to scuttle what would have been the seminal peace talks of Trump's presidency and to force the Americans in theory to basically ride or die with the Ukrainians in the 11th hour. And that should tell everybody what precisely is going on here. This was a Ukrainian and European operation with help from rogue elements within the U.S. intelligence services.
Dmitry, you know, the gleefulness in Western media, again, you know, NPR was one of the worst and a very dreadful news outlet. But, you know, this was, you know, humiliating Vladimir Putin. I would say Donald Trump is humiliated as well. Would you agree with that, Dmitry?
Well, he was humiliated a long time ago. I mean, let's just be honest here. The man has done everything possible to get the Russians to accede to a so-called peace deal.
Okay, well, Dmitry, let me rephrase it. Okay. The whole thing about rebuilding U.S.-Russia relations was to start rebuilding trust, okay? And there was some, at least they talked to each other. You can talk to each other. You can pick up on the phone and talk, okay? I don't see the point in talking at all anymore. I mean, the Russia's nuclear triad was tested and damaged. You know, people talk about red lines. I mean, there's certain things I can understand about red lines. Going in that area, that is unthinkable. That is an American attack on Russia's nuclear security. This is a serious business. Go ahead, Dmitry.
An insane escalation. Peter, an absolutely insane escalation, but it's perfectly consistent with what we have seen from the United States government for years. There were insane provocations, and we were going up the escalation ladder when Biden was the president. It just has continued. There's complete continuity in the policies of the U.S. government. Vladimir Putin himself observed many times, I think quite rightly, that it doesn't really matter who the U.S. president is.
Yeah, see, the Tucker Carlson interview, yes. Yes, he mentioned that here. I mean, Dmitry, I don't know. I don't want to parse words too much here, and maybe it's a fool's errand. But in your mind, is there a distinction between Donald Trump and his administration? Because I think that's what Brandon's getting at. Go ahead, Dmitry.
There's a rhetorical distinction. There is a rhetorical distinction. You know, my read on this, and look, at the end of the day, we're all kind of reading the tea leaves here, and my interpretation could be incorrect. I readily acknowledge that. But I think Trump understood he has very clever electoral advisors, public relations experts working for him. And he understood during the presidential campaign that there was a strong and growing appetite within the United States electorate for bringing this war to an end. So he adopted the rhetoric that was necessary to win those people over. But it was all BS. It was total utter BS, and we have seen proof after proof after proof of that, this one being the most dramatic ever since Trump actually returned to the White House. It was just a vote-getting rhetorical measure. That's all it was. But his actions scream escalation all the way. And I can't agree more with your observation, Peter, that he didn't have, nobody put a gun to his head and said, make Marco Rubio the Secretary of State, or put Keith Kellogg, that bloodthirsty incompetent in charge of the negotiations, you know, or Mike Waltz or any of these characters. Trump chose to put those people in power. And if he was actually committed to peace and de-escalation, he would never have contemplated putting those people in such positions of influence within his administration.
Trump brought those people in because of political favors. He let Susie Wiles pick some people. These are all Susie's picks. That's his chief of staff. I don't think you understand the dynamics with it. Trump is not exerting control. I think you have a lot of faith in his advisors being intelligent as well. He did not hire the very best people in many cases.
Gentlemen,
when you hire clowns, you get a circus. This is what we have.
Well, that's true. No, and that is very true. Yes, this is my frustration as somebody who's been involved with this for a decade almost, is that he has hired people who are showmen and carnival barkers. And this is why you're getting such conflicting actions from him, because the president wants one thing. And then his advisors go away and they do their own thing. We saw this. Here's another example. The recent fight over Chevron renewing the Chevron licenses in Venezuela. President Trump was very clear. I know for a fact, President Trump was very clear with his team. He didn't want them renewed. That was a Biden era policy. He didn't want it renewed. Chevron hired a very powerful lobbyist to go in and lobby people like Richard Grenell and manipulate them into using a lot of money, as well as manipulate the MAGA influencers on social media to basically run away from the president until the 11th hour, when the president had to be brought back into the affair to say, I don't want this to happen. And that is how that whole process went down. There is no real discernible process in the White House. And that's how it was in the first term as well. And this is what a lot of international observers don't understand. It is chaos incorporated. Well,
let's broaden it out, gentlemen. Dimitri, so I'm sure there are people in Tehran watching all of this, obviously people in Moscow watching all of this. Why make a deal with these people in Washington? Is it remotely possible? I mean, you know, I don't know to what degree Trump really believes in ending the war in Ukraine. We have his words, okay? But up until 2 days ago, Trump was talking about Ukraine incessantly, and suddenly he stopped. Go ahead, Dimitri.
Yeah. Everything about the Trump administration reeks of mistrust and duplicity. So let's look at what's going on in Palestine.
Yep.
The Hamas released the last American Israeli soldier. You think they did that for nothing? They were expecting the Trump administration to reciprocate. What reciprocation has there been? They just massacred something like 36 starving Palestinians and wounded a couple hundred others after inserting American mercenaries into Gaza, which is undergoing a genocide. The Trump administration has been sending contradictory signals to Iran. On the one hand, sometimes you'll hear, you know, people in his administration say, well, we can live with a very low level of enrichment. And then just yesterday, Trump comes out and says, no enrichment whatsoever. So if I'm sitting there from the Iranian perspective, I look at what they're doing in Palestine, what they're doing in Ukraine, the contradictory messages that I'm getting, my rational conclusion, I have to go on the available evidence. I can't read Trump's mind. The available evidence suggests that Trump is the height of duplicity and he is agreement incapable. That's the conclusion that all non-Western powers should draw. Whatever his actual internal thinking is, we don't really know at the end of the day. We have to look at the external evidence, and that's what the evidence shows.
Yeah, and Brandon, in the meantime, the Europeans are causing all kinds of mischief. Did you know that the UK is preparing to go to war? Did you know that? Yeah. Who knew? Yeah. Who knew?
Talk about
a circus, but the most dangerous circus in town, Brandon.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a complete disaster, and it's a disaster of our own making. I mean, you're not going to get an argument from me. I'm just trying to provide some context here, because it is far scarier when you actually know some of the things that are going on behind the scenes are not going on. You talked about the UK. This is perfidious Albion, exactly acting as they always will. This is, you know, Emmanuel Macron's in this club too. You know, you have Germany kind of involved. The Europeans very badly want to deploy a very small force, if they can even muster that, into Ukraine. And then they want the Russians to possibly kill that force so then they can run to Washington and say, see, Article 5 has to be invoked. This is why Trump has got to move us off the continent. Trump has got to get us out of NATO, because these people are insane and they're going to lead to the destruction of the United States, of the world system. And this is not something that MAGA wants.
And now, remarkably, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but, you know, in 2025, I'll go to Dmitry, we're in a position now where Merz is the most aggressive German chancellor since Adolf Hitler. I mean, that's where we are. And from a German... Dmitry.
Yeah, Chancellor BlackRock is an existential threat.
I mean, he's in a lucky position because there's no one worse than Adolf Hitler. So he's handicapped. Starmer isn't in the same position. He's still runner up for the worst prime minister. And we've had some really bad ones recently. Remember Liz Truss? Remember her?
Yeah.
Wow.
She's still kind of floating around.
I mean, you know, who would have thought we're going to miss miss 360 there? I don't yet then. And anyway, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Naples and in Athens. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.